Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener Salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
This episode of AstronomyCast is brought to you by Swinburne Astronomy Online, the world's longest-running online astronomy degree program. Visit astronomy.swin.edu.au for more information.
AstronomyCast, episode 280 for Monday, November 12th, 2012, The Cosmological Constant. Welcome to AstronomyCast, our weekly facts-based journey through the cosmos, where we help you understand not only what we know, but how we know what we know. My name is Fraser Cain. I'm the publisher of Universe Today, and with me is Dr. Pamela Gay, a professor at Southern Illinois University, Ebersville. Hey, Pamela, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Fraser?
Good. So we are actually recording a second episode on one day to catch up from all of your MedCap travel, so...
And we're actually getting ready to do Madcap travel together in like 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
3 weeks, yeah. We're going to be cruising the Mexican Riviera looking for evidence of the world ending on December 21st, 2012.
We're going to be looking at really cool melting architecture.
Yeah, Mayan ruins.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. It's going to be really fun.
And we know a bunch of you out there are going to be with us, and we are working to get from Zelda a list of you so that we can contact you.
Yeah, and we're going to try and do some, you know, we're going to do some official stuff, like recording some episodes of Astronomy Cast, and maybe we'll do we got a couple of talks that we do, so maybe we'll do that.
And there'll be unofficial stuff like office hours and public spaces that include like junk food and stuff like that.
Yeah, going for dinner and hanging out. A lot of hanging out. So, So this is going to be fun. I think this is going to be a really neat experiment to kind of to see if we can start to pull together fans of Astronomy Cast and fans of space and astronomy in general and maybe do more events like this. I would love to be able to do something in Hawaii where we could actually, you know, pull some strings and see some observatories. And wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's what's happening. So if you're going to be there, we'll see you soon. And if you're not going to be there, we'll see you next time we do this. So.
We're always online,
yeah. So, and once again, we're recording this episode as a live Google Plus Hangout. And if you want to be able to watch us record the episodes live, just circle the Astronomy Cast page on Google Plus, and then it will circle you back, and then you will start to receive notifications in your calendar when we're about to record, especially when we do non-standard ones. But normally, we record every Monday at 12 noon Pacific time.
This episode of Astronomy Cast is brought to you by 8th Light, Inc. 8th Light is an agile software development company. They craft beautiful applications that are durable and reliable. 8th Light provides disciplined software leadership on demand and shares its expertise to make your project better. For more information, visit them online at www.8thlight.com. Just remember, that's www.8thlight.com. Drop them a note. 8th Light. Software is their craft.
In order to allow for a static universe, Albert Einstein introduced the concept of the cosmological constant to make the math work out. Once it was discovered that the universe was actually expanding, he threw the number out, calling it his biggest blunder. But thanks to dark energy, the cosmological constant is back with a vengeance. All right, Pamela, so this is another kind of half history, half math episode.
Well, and it's also one of these, there's history as it works out mathematically and history as we explain it when we're too lazy to explain the math. And that's kind of a weird concept, but everyone starts just like you just started with the Einstein created the cosmological constant to make the math work out. Well, that's a great hand-waving statement that says absolutely nothing. And right. and when you look at the math, if any of you schmoes out there have had the same educational system I have, you at some point took Calc 1 and learned to integrate and differentiate, and I guess that's really Calc 2 is where you integrate. And when you integrate an equation in calculus, there's a constant, and it can be anything. I, at one point, while frustrated and taking calculus in Russian, as one does as a foreign exchange student, I decided to just start like putting smiley faces. The cosmological constant is that constant that comes out of integration that you can set to whatever you want. And when Einstein originally said it, he was working from the philosophical premise, not the mathematical premise, the philosophical premise that our universe was static. And so he set it up to stay our universe.
Okay, so what, I guess, when Einstein started to go down this road, what was the generally accepted thinking about what the universe was like?
Well, we had two competing confusions. One was the Resolver's paradox, which said when you look up, the sky is dark, kind of stating the obvious. But then the next step of Olber's paradox was stating, well, if our universe is infinite in both size and time, the sky shouldn't be dark, because everywhere you look, your view will end in a star. But since the sky is dark, then the universe has to be finite in either time or size or both. And so there was that. We knew that. But then there was also the idea that things are forever, and our universe is static, our universe is unchanging. And it was that philosophical notion that our universe is static and unchanging that led Einstein to think, well, when we look at the universe, we shouldn't see it expanding, we shouldn't see it contracting, we should see it be.
Right, but I guess one of the ideas, you know, once you start to understand gravity a little bit, you would look out to this universe and wonder why all of these galaxies weren't, I guess, starting to clump together with gravity. Why wasn't...
But why should they? And you're also assuming that they knew what galaxies were at that point.
Gravity sucks.
But the planets don't fall into the sun.
Right, because they're orbiting, you know, the orbit of their orbital velocity is balancing out their gravity.
The idea
right?
is, if our universe is great enough, if our universe is expansive enough, this galaxy over here is pulling on this galaxy. But then there's a galaxy over here, and there's another one up here, and everything is able to swarm. Everything is able to move so that the combined motions lead to no expansion and no contraction. That was the belief system. And you can get there mathematically.
And so you might get situations where these galaxies are going to collide and sweep past one another and orbit one another, but they're just all just doing their thing, buzzing around in this static universe.
Yes, and that was the idea, is it was a static universe.
And so then the question was this static universe infinite or was it finite, right?
Well, so they knew that somewhere along the line it was finite. And I hate to say this, but it was the age where Christianity, in many ways, when in doubt, resort to the Old Testament. And that works for all the great religions except for Hinduism, actually. And so you got back to that whole Garden of Eden. There's a zero point in time from which the universe emerges, and that was enough to fix Olber's paradox. So you could have a static universe,
right,
spatially infinite,
as long as it wasn't infinite in time.
Right.
Okay. So you got, so it's, you know, boom, there's a universe. And as long as that there's a certain amount of time from when that happened, then you're not going to get this situation where the entire sky is completely white because there's a star in every direction at some point. Okay, great. So this is the universe as I guess, you know, cosmologists understood it at that point.
Right.
So then what changed everything?
Well, it basically observing. So it started off, and Einstein, he was the one that came up with the equations. He was the one that used that constant that comes out of integration to stay in the universe. But there were other theorists like Lemaitre who said that the universe could be expanding. And it was Hubble working, as we talked about in the last episode, to measure the velocities of galaxies as a function of distance that figured out our universe is expanding. And this introduced the astronomy that people our age learned in school, which is we live in an expanding universe that, depending on how much stuff is in that expanding universe, is either going to expand forever, is going to basically expand to a stop asymptotically, or crunch in on itself. And those were the only three options that we were given in our textbooks. But then in 1998, everything changed.
Right. But let's go back a bit, though, because I think, you know, Einstein, I guess, learning Hubble's discovery that, in fact, we live in an expanding universe, he had to throw out. So I guess he had introduced the cosmological constant to support that static universe idea, right? So what was sort of the role of that? Yeah.
Without the cosmological constant, you have a universe that is quite happily expanding. That's where the math goes naturally.
Really?
But when you add in the cosmological constant, well, you can set that value to anything you want. So you can stop the universe, you can slow the universe, you can expand the universe.
You can be a negative number and have the universe come back together again.
Why not?
Sure.
The math doesn't care.
Yeah.
This is where observing becomes so important. And so it was with the observations. Initially, we had Vesto Slipher noting that more galaxies were moving away from us than moving towards us. Hubble then figured out using Cepheid variables that, as a function of distance, objects appeared to be moving faster. Appeared is the key word there. And this matches the idea of an expanding universe. And then it came down to trying to figure out, well, is the universe expanding due to the entire universe at one point was smaller, or is it expanding because new stuff is coming into the universe? So this is basically the question of, do we have a finite amount of stuff that started out smaller, or do we have an increasing amount of stuff over time? And we now know, thanks to observations, that it's that Big Bang notion of finite amount of stuff getting spread out over greater volume over time as the universe expands.
But I think that's a really interesting kind of funny anecdote, right? That Einstein, had done the math, and then had gotten to a conclusion, and his conclusion predicted an expanding universe, and then to constrain it to what was the philosophical expectation for what the universe should be like, he had to throw in a fudge, and then...
It wasn't a fudge. It was a mathematically allowed constant.
I understand, but he wouldn't even have occurred to him if he had known that the universe was expanding. So the fact that he had done it, right, was to kind of go, the math predicts expansion, but we know it's not possible for there to be expansion. Therefore, I'm going to do this thing that the math allows. But this is the point. And then the Hubble announcement comes out, and he goes, oops.
Yeah.
And then calls it his biggest blunder, which I think is quite an interesting thing. Well, after the fact, as he turns out to be right again. But during the time, I think that was a very humble thing for him to do. You don't get a lot of scientists who just kind of go, oh, my bad, totally wrong.
I'm pretty sure he didn't do it instantaneously. But he was fully willing to say, observation says this, and I need to work. And he worked with so many other great minds in his time. There's this whole group of people who were working to define relativity and cosmology that made huge progress, and he was part of that international dialogue in letters and journal articles and conference proceedings that defined the shape of space and time. Now the problem was that when they were done, they defined a variable system of we don't know. But what was interesting is they only had those three options that we mentioned, the expand forever, expand to a stop, contract in. And they discussed how it was possible that we had multiple geometries of space. And there were certain assumptions made. And when I took cosmology, it was, you can change the geometry, but we're going to assume certain things. And one of those things that we're going to assume is that the rate of expansion is either slowing or stopping or shrinking, but accelerating was not an option that we learned. Right. And in fact, right, the mathematics is much, much uglier when you make that becomes reality.
Right. So pre-1998, the future of the universe was either the expansion would go on forever, that there was enough almost like momentum for the expansion to overcome gravity.
The way to look at it was there wasn't enough mass to stop the expansion.
Right. And so either you were going to get the situation where it was just going to keep on expanding and expanding forever, slowing the drift, but not enough for it to, you know, it's like shooting a rocket off of the Earth and you give it enough velocity and it's going to make it into space. And then this other idea is that it would just sort of reach this perfect balance point and you would almost end up with that static universe,
right? Infinite time asymptotically. So it never quite stops. It just slows.
Right. And then there was the idea that, well, there's tons of mass, way too much mass, and you get to this point, it would like a rubber band, and then snap back down together again.
Big crunch.
And where did most people feel that the evidence was taking them?
Well, we really didn't have, it was opinion. I actually remember when I was a grad student, one of our faculty inadvertently led to me having much strife with some of the students that were in both his class and my class, because after teaching there are three ways for the universe to end, he wrote on an exam the question, how do you believe the universe will end? Never use the word believe, just avoid the word believe. And he wanted students, of course, to decide how did they, if they were able to choose of these three options, how did they want to see the universe end? And of course, when you say the word believe, you're going to get people who believe something other than those three options and are going to happily discuss it. So don't use that word in exam, professors and teachers out there.
Right.
But we just didn't know. And so it was valid to say, here are three options. Pick one to talk about that is your preferred method for scientifically ending our universe. And that mathematically, the mathematics worked out best if you had a universe that was asymptotically stopping with a linear geometry, fewest variables to deal with, least crying involved in solving the equations, easiest to program into a computer. Let's go with that one.
I like the math, so that's my choice. Yeah.
Yes.
The math is easy. Okay. So 1998, which is
the
so recent.
The math got harder.
Yeah, which is just so recent. I mean, I started Universe Today 1 year after that discovery. So, this is all so fresh in our
history. And what's awesome
is
they've already given the Nobel Prize for this.
Yeah.
So back in 1998, there were two different competing supernovae teams. And there's one type of supernovae, the type 1A. These occur when a white dwarf star carnivorously munches too much atmosphere off of a nearby neighbor star and bloats itself up until it basically becomes a nuclear bomb and it explodes. And just like you expect a certain amount of TNT to always give off the same amount of energy when it blows up, a white dwarf, when it hits that detonation mass, it's always going to have the same amount of stuff exploding. So same amount of energy given off, assuming we understand all of the physics correctly. Yep. You have to start somewhere. And so since these are standard-sized explosions, when you see a type 1A go off, you can say, I know how much light it gave off. I see how bright it appears. I can calculate its distance. And so there were these two different supernovae teams that were working to measure supernovae to ever greater distances, trying just to measure the expansion rate of the universe. They were just trying to get at the Hubble constant. And they knew that there was the chance that as they got to greater and greater distances, they'd be able to see the linear relationship between velocity and distance fall over, that they'd be able to see the deceleration of the slowing universe.
Because they can calculate that and then figure out, is it going to expand forever?
Is it going to crunch?
Yep.
And at the same time, we had we were working on figuring out the microwave background. There was a lot of research going on. Well, both of these supernovae teams observed and went to publication at similar points in time. They both observed that the universe isn't actually slowing as we anticipated, that the amount of expansion going on per megaparsec isn't shrinking as we get to nearer times, but rather it's growing. And this was the holy expletive of your choice, Batman. The universe is accelerating itself apart. This was not something any of us had been taught to.
None of the above.
It was a mathematical reality. The equations allowed this to happen. But nothing, we weren't prepared. This was not an option of anyone's choice. And I remember seeing Chris Impey giving a talk at the AAAS, and he basically said, who ordered this? This makes the math harder. This isn't something we would have chosen. And it was an example of how, if you do good science, if you have solid observational results with sufficiently low error bars, and in this case, we had two competing teams with matching results, if you do your science well enough and you present your results concisely and clearly, everyone will follow you down a road of mathematical hell no one wants to go down, because that's the reality of our universe.
Yeah, reality bites.
Yeah.
So, right, okay, so then what does the cosmological constant look like today? Now, I know astronomers refer to it as lambda, right?
Yeah, that's just the value that Einstein threw into the equation when he did his integration. You need a letter. Lambda was a good one. He picked capital lambda. We use capital lambda today.
What does a lambda look like? It's like a little upside-down V, isn't it, kind of?
Yeah, it's the letter that they use as an A in the Stargate.
I was totally thinking about Stargate, actually. You're right. So it's the A in Stargate. Perfect.
Yeah. Without the circle, but
without the circle in it at the top. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Right. So that's a lambda. Upside down V. Lambda.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, and you know, the math is complicated, right? So what do you have to do with lambda now?
Well, it just basically adds extra terms to all of your calculations. So every time you add extra terms, if you've ever had to solve quadratic equations, yeah, you can do it. It's harder to solve a quadratic equation than it is to solve x plus 3 equals 9.
Right.
So it's still doable. It just takes longer. There's more chewing required to process your equations. It makes it harder to code everything into a computer. So mostly it's just we're all at our heart of hearts lazy. We can solve it, but it just added extra terms to all the equations.
And, you know, is there a sort of a number? Like what is the, you know, in the last episode we talked about the Hubble constant and we sort of zeroed in on 77-ish?
Yeah.
Kilometers per second per megaparsec. So is there a similar... Right. sort of number, and what is that measuring?
So this one gets nastier. We don't actually normally quote lambda as a standalone value. Yeah, you can chew through the equations and get to a value of lambda. Mm-hmm. Lambda equals zero is no cosmological constant. But the rest of the time, we tend to talk about lambda in terms of the mass density of the universe. We tend to talk about it in terms of what is the energy intrinsic in every cubic meter of space, because it's that physical parameter of, well, how much energy is there in a cubic meter of space? It's that
how much
physical,
energy is there in 8 cubics?
It's actually a couple protons worth.
Right.
It's not much.
Yeah.
But that small amount of energy that we, some people call it vacuum pressure, some people refer to it as a force, it's enough to push apart the universe, because every cubic meter has that same energy density. And the creepy part that leaves a lot of us going, we don't like this, is as the universe has expanded, that amount of vacuum energy per cubic meter has stayed constant. So this means that the amount of energy in the universe is actually not constant over the observable universe. So yeah, this sort of breaks the whole when you look at conservation of energy over closed systems, but it's not a closed system. It's a observable system, and that causes an escape clause for some people, especially right. Those who like to think we're uniquely positioned in the center of a big bubble of mass that is lots more mass out there than in here, and thus that extra. But that requires special geometries. It's all confusing. People are coming up with excuses for what we observe. But the reality is we don't know. This is the great new mystery.
Right. But I guess the point, like what they're getting at is, you know, the amount of pressure that's being generated per
force
cubic something megaparsec per meter squared.
Yeah, it's where we look. There's so many different ways to phrase this. Some people look at it as a force. Some people look at it as a pressure. Some people look at it as an energy density, and what it all gets down to is when you look at the composition of our universe. There's the normal stuff, the baryonic matter, which is everything that we see via light, basically, and that's 4.6% of the universe. Then there's all that weird non-baryonic stuff that we call dark matter. This is the stuff that causes the outskirts of galaxies to move faster than anticipated, that causes the velocities of galaxies and clusters to be greater than anticipated. That's 23% of our universe. Now, that's only a small fraction when you add up all of that matter, the baryonic and non-baryonic matter. And everything else, that's the dark matter. That's
the dark energy.
Dark energy. Yes, sorry. Yeah. That's the dark energy. That's the 72% of our universe that is pushing everything apart. And that push is, well, it's the acceleration, and it manifests itself as an acceleration.
And so, right. And so as we're getting more universe, mm-hmm. we're getting more of this acceleration. But I mean, we measure acceleration, what, in meters squared, right? Meters per second squared. So do we measure the this dark energy in kind of the same way? And
So the way to look at it is with the Hubble constant, we have kilometers per second per megaparsec of space. So take a megaparsec, and then you have the rate at which that megaparsec is getting bigger given in kilometers per second. The acceleration of that is given in kilometers per second per second. Right. And that number changes over time as dark energy becomes more and more important as the stuff gets spread out and gravity. We switch from being a matter-dominated universe to being a dark energy-dominated universe. And the crazy thing is, this value could also be increasing. We don't know, but
that's the question, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the really interesting possible ramification of this.
Yeah.
And this is one of the big unknowns is this amount of acceleration constant or is it increasing? Because if it's increasing, then we get this idea of the big rip.
Well, we had the big rip anyways. It just becomes more dramatic. It's a matter of do you poke through the universe or do you just simply abruptly shred it.
Right. In that we get to in a distant future, we'll get a situation where the acceleration is so strong that galaxies are starting to get torn apart and then solar systems are getting torn apart, and then
I think pretty much everyone thinks that everything's going to evaporate and be consumed before that happens, and we're basically going to have proton decay. Hopefully, we're still working on proving proton decay.
Yeah.
But the universe will simply decay away before anything starts getting shredded. So no one being terrified of this. No.
Well, yeah,
scare.
Yeah. Trillions of years in the future. But there are. I mean, isn't there a dark matter spacecraft that's actually trying to really hone in on the amount of, dark energy, right?
I don't think we've launched yet.
Yeah.
There are plans, and the Decadal Survey here in the United States lists as a priority building a mission to try and understand dark energy. But the question is how? And so this is where you get a lot of people struggling with trying to figure out how exactly do we understand this beyond looking to earlier moments in the universe and making sure as we measure the expansion rates in those early days, well, do those expansion rates correspond with a constant lambda value? Do they correspond to there always being that same couple of protons of energy per cubic meter of space?
Cool. All right. Well, I think we've covered the cosmological constant. So thank you very much, Pamela. That was great.
My pleasure.
All right. We'll talk to you next time.
Talk to you later.
This has been Astronomy Cast, a weekly facts-based journey through the cosmos. Show notes and transcripts for every episode are available on our website. Check it out at astronomycast.com. You can send us any comments, questions, or feedback to info@astronomycast.com. We read every email. The show is a nonprofit educational resource provided by Fraser Kane and Dr. Pamela Gay. We're supported through the kind donations of listeners like you. If you enjoy Astronomy Cast, why not give us a donation? It helps us pay for bandwidth, transcripts, and show notes. Just click the donate link on the website. All donations are tax deductible for U.S. taxpayers. You can support the show for free, too. Write a review or recommend it to your friends. Every little bit helps. Click support the show on our website to see some suggestions. To subscribe to the show, point your podcatching software at astronomycast.com/podcast.xml or subscribe directly from iTunes. Music is provided by Travis Searle. The show was edited by Preston Gibson. Astronomy Cast is produced at Southern Illinois University Edwardsville with generous support from Universe Today.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.